You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of November 13, 2013. I guess we should have recorded on 11-12-13, but we're not necessarily an organized organization. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I wanted to do a big intro this week. I wanted to do a lot of fancy wordplay and stuff, but you know what? It's been a busy as hell day and a busy as hell week, and I am with here with my main man, my other duo. I guess you can't have another duo. My partner in crime, the yin to my yang, the white to my black, the number two pencil to my ink blotter pen. Managing editor Adam White. Adam, you have a baby too, so I assume you're pretty busy too.
You have a baby at all?
Do I have a baby?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do I? None that I know of.
You said two.
Well, what did I say?
Yeah, that I have a baby too. Would imply you have a baby also.
Oh, I guess it would. I don't have any babies that I know of, but I'm just saying I assume you're busy because you have a baby.
Ah, yes. This is one of those nights where my wife has decided that she gets to, go have friends and a social life, which is just a shocking concept. So I'm it's just me and the baby tonight. So she just went to sleep. I said to her, listen, it's podcast time. I don't care. Go to bed. And she didn't listen to me because she's like 11 months old and they don't really understand words that you say.
But Papa, I want your love. And you were like, shut up. I got to record the podcast. I care about the punks, not about familial connections.
That's right. Well, actually, me and her were listening to Give Him Enough Rope before that. It's about that time of day where she gets like super irrationally cranky. So we got through, Julie's in the drug squad and she was cool. And then after that, it kind of went downhill. So I don't know if that is necessarily a baby level commentary on the second Clash album, but that's what happened. So this is really interesting to people, I'm sure.
Well, no, actually, you know, I'm glad you bring that up because if you remember last week, we were like, yo, do people find us talking about records interesting? And apparently they do because we got not one, but several emails and communiques about our vinyl adventures. Here's what Ricky said. Ricky said, hey guys, as a fellow vinyl collector, hearing about your finds and buys is a really cool idea. Much better than the short-lived recommendation segment. As usual, you're doing a great job on the podcast. Well, thank you, Ricky. I always appreciate the positivity. I think often people think of Punk News as a negative place commentary-wise, but I actually think Punk News is a pretty positive place. It's just that it's easy to focus on the negative things. But I would say 95% of our readers are pretty cool, pretty sweet, pretty on-the-level people.
Well, all right, so should we talk about records for a few minutes?
We should, but not only did Ricky email us, Tuffy sent me a message, and here's what Tuffy said. I love the fact that you guys talk about records and record stores. I'm a former vinyl collector, no more, because I have no more space. So thanks for listening, Tuffy. We should talk about records. Adam, do you want to talk about Black Friday Record Store Day, or did you have something else in mind?
Well, I'm going to leave that one to you because Black Friday is strictly an American thing, sort of like the American thing. It's an American thing. I don't know what you're talking about.
I really should know the answer to this, but in Canada, do they have a Thanksgiving analog?
Well, no, not really. Again, our Thanksgiving is like a month before yours is, for reasons that I could not really explain. Aside from the fact that like your Thanksgiving has some sort of historical reason why it exists. Our Thanksgiving doesn't. It was more of just that people at one point were like, hey, that Thanksgiving thing sounds like a pretty good idea. We like turkey. Let's do that. But then we looked at it and we said, but we're not going to put ours so close to Christmas because that's fucking crazy. So ours is like a month before yours. So we don't have this like Thanksgiving is over. Holy fuck, it's time to shop thing that you guys do.
Do you call it Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we do.
And you have turkey and everything.
Yeah, but the turkey is red.
Really?
No.
Oh. You got me on that one, Adam.
Yeah, so no, as far as I know, our Thanksgiving is pretty much the same as yours, except that there is no there's no Puritan imagery to it.
Mm.
Like, you'll never see, like, one of those, like, Quaker Oats guys' hats or whatever you call them that you guys have. Like, because again, there's no historical purpose for it, as far as I can tell, or at least has been ever been taught to me in a way that I've retained.
Adam,
it's just,
Adam, you are a bigot. Quakers and Puritans are two entirely different religions. You are a bigot.
Well, all Canadians are bigots, really. We're just very quiet about our bigotry. But anyways, yeah, so there's none of that imagery. So, you know, we had, I'm sure the rest of it is pretty similar. Like, when we were kids in school, we would have, like, traced your hand and made it into a turkey or that kind of shit that kids do. Did you do that?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
Indeed, indeed.
I mean, I did that, like, probably last year or so. So anyways, yeah, so I'm sure, like, all, like, for the most part, you know, symbolism wise, it's the same, except for the Puritan bit. Yeah, we don't do that because no one would know.
I wonder if it feels any different, because when you do Thanksgiving, it's summer's just barely over, I guess. Well, now it's already October-ish, I guess.
Yeah, it's like right in the middle of the harvest. Yeah. So, you know, to me, it fits better with the, hey, it's the harvest. We need to eat all this food that we're thankful for. You guys, it's like, fuck, man, like, have you had your Thanksgiving yet?
No, not for another 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's more or less, winter is beginning. It's a wasteland. All the food that you would harvest would be, like, rotten and frostbitten at this point. Maybe it's because we're further north. Everything's starting to freeze.
True. You know, I do love how a lot of holidays really are just, evolved from pagan holidays. Like, Halloween is probably 5,000 years old. I love that, you know?
I don't even know what I'm going to do. I agree. I guess.
I just think it's so. I will now impress the Punk News audience with a random factoid trivia. Adam White, do you know the oldest unchanged word in the English language?
Mm. Is it about sex?
No. The word is. The word. Well, I will tell you what the word's original name is, and it's still the same word in English, although it's pronounced a little differently. This word is probably 6,000 years old. Are you ready, Adam?
Yes.
Gamal.
As far as anyone is understanding this, you just said, come on.
Gamal. Gamal. I guess you would, G-O-M-Y-L. Gamal.
And what is the modern day?
It's camel.
Oh, all right.
Camel is 6,000 years old. That blows my mind.
Well, that's when God created the earth, right? So that makes sense.
I think that might be before. When was God supposed to create the earth?
I don't know, like 45 minutes ago or so, right?
Yeah, right? Well, speaking of God creating the earth, God will be creating a surplus in spending on Black Friday. I guess, Adam, because you guys don't have Thanksgiving when we do, do you not have the Record Store Day Black Friday?
I have no idea.
Because you have regular Record Store Day, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, the stores up here do Record Store Day. I mean, like, I live far enough from, like, a regular record store that I could go to that's any of any interest that I haven't, like, really usually done much with the Record Store Days, because they're a bit of a travel thing for me. But I would assume that the retailers up here would participate regardless, but definitely, like, the core Record Store Day for sure. I don't know about the Black Friday one, because, again, there's no real, like, for Black Friday, you guys, is that like the day, like all of a sudden, like the gates are open? Yeah, it is, because we always see it on the news how like a bunch of people in Alabama will like trample like an old lady going into a Walmart, right?
Right, right.
Okay. We see that. That's part of like our like world news. We're like we'll turn on the news whenever Black Friday is, and there'll be like the normal kind of slate of incoming world tragedies that we'll see. You know, there'll be unrest on the streets in Egypt, and there'll be, you know, there's a typhoon in, you know, in Sri Lanka, and there's, you know, this or that intrigue happening in North Korea, and then like, you know, some poor old lady got smushed in Alabama at Black Friday. It's just like one of the tragedies that comes in that day for us from you guys. But anyway, so yeah, so I mean, because we don't have that, because we don't have like, you know, like the bell is rung, the bulls are out of the pen. I don't know however fuck metaphor I'm going with for this. I don't know. I don't think they do up here. So yeah. So anyway, so talk about Black Friday Record Store, because,
Well, I guess a lot of people hate on Record Store Day because A, they say, well, you should stop at the Record Store Days every week or whatever. But I mean, I gotta say, I love record stores purely for selfish reasons. The reason I love record stores is because they get in used records, and a lot of times you'll see stuff that you never see anywhere else. You don't even see it on eBay. That's why I love record stores, just because you get rare and unusual stuff. And plus, also, you can get like all those sweet, sweet dollar bin records. I love dollar bin records, Adam. I love them. So I'm usually pro record store day because I'm for anything that increases the amount of money that record stores get. I realize that it's sort of a racket because, like, a lot of the money gets kicked back to the record store organization or whatever. But, I mean, even so, every day after record store day, all my, like, I follow record stores on Facebook, like my few favorite ones. And they always talk about how it was, like, their biggest day ever. So whatever gives them extra money, I'm all for. I think record store day is becoming a little lame lately because the prices have gotten a little bit out of control. Like, $15 for a 7-inch, $40 for a 12-inch. That's pretty whack, you know. Also, about 3 years ago, there was tons and tons of records that I wanted. I would be dropping $100 on record store day, and like maybe $50 to $75 on Black Friday. But the past 2 years, there really hasn't been that much I've been interested in. What I do love about record store day is it does encourage the release of things that wouldn't normally get released because there's not enough demand for them. But on record store day, there is enough demand. For example, the Off Live 7-inch. I mean, not a whole lot of people. Frank, let's be real. Not a whole lot of people are buying Off records. So that Live 7-inch was so awesome. The Tegan and Sarah Live 7-inch was awesome. The Slayer 7-inch was really cool, where they had it like a serial killer's psychological profile, which was cool. This year's record store day had like nothing. It had like one thing that I wanted. Black Friday's got a couple things that I'm probably going to pick up depending on the price. I'm definitely going to pick up the Rolling Stones Rolling Stones got Live If You Want It 7-inch, which is different than the US 12-inch have got Live If You Want It. It's five like old school Rolling Stones songs done live from like 1964. It's a cool release that was only available in the UK. I'm gonna pick up the Tegan and Sarah 7-inch, which just has an A and a B side on it, which should be pretty cool. Hopefully it won't be like $15. Hopefully it'll be like 6 or 7. I would pick up the Nas 12-inch called Halftime, which is a re-release of his very first song. But honestly, as we all know, these 12-inch singles are like $12 or $15 at record store day, so I'm not going to get that. I'm going to get the Flaming Lips new EP with the songs from Ender's Game, because I'm a big Flaming Lips fan. Depending on the price, I'm either going to get the vinyl or maybe just the regular CD. And I was going to get the Upsetters, This Is Lee Scratch Perry, the re-release of Super Ape, one of the greatest albums of all time. It's on two albums with it's on two LPs with some bonus dubs on the third side. But I actually already have all these songs. It's basically a re-release of a CD version of the album from like 6 or 7 years ago that I have. So if it's like $20, I'll pick it up. But if it's like $40, which I think it will be, I won't pick it up. So I mean, that being said, there's some neat releases coming out. I'm glad they put out these stuff that they usually wouldn't be able to sell. But I do think the prices are getting a little out of control. So hopefully we'll see a cut back from the $15 or $12 7-inch back to, you know, the $6 or $8 7-inch.
Cool. So you pick anything up over the past week that's interesting, or any current ongoing record news for the people?
Yeah, actually, I'll give a shout out to a record. How about I just give a shout out to a brand new record store opened up near me. It's without question the best record store outside of Philadelphia. Honestly, it's probably the best record store outside of Philadelphia within 300 miles of Philadelphia. Well, honestly, even New York, I've been to a whole bunch of New York record stores, and they're kind of whack, honestly. I got to say, man, I was unimpressed with New York record stores. Near my house in Wilmington, but it's technically in Wilmington, but not really. There's this brand new record store called Jupiter Records. It's technically in Wilmington, but not really. And I gotta say, man, it's insane. They get in as much vinyl as the San Francisco record stores do. It's insane, and their prices are really fair. I got the Mothers of Invention, just another band from LA, for $3. I got James Brown's Funky People for $3. I got Rolling Stones Now for $1. I got Bob Dylan's Greatest Hits for $2. And this is probably the punk news people appreciate this the most. I got an original pressing of the Stooges' Raw Power, but it's the UK pressing. $10.
Oh, very cool. That's awesome. Over the past week, we were up in Guelph, Ontario, over the weekend, which is where I went to university, actually. And my wife and child were at a baby shower, and I was just kind of left to roam the city up to my own devices. And there isn't really a great record store that is in Guelph, at least none that I'm aware of, except that there's this local chain of like used like CD and DVD stores that are up there that I used to be, and this was back in the heydays when I was buying like a billion CDs, that I used to be at all the time. Now, partly I was at this place all the time when I was in university, because when I was in university between like 2001 and 2005, so this was kind of like the last insane CD hurrah where I was still on a million press release lists. So at our little apartment that we lived at in Guelph, we would just, you know, the people I lived with would get like a piece of mail every, you know, like twice a month. And I would have like every time we emptied the mailbox, like six CDs in there. So way more, which sounds great. I think in principle, but it's not, because then you just end up with bins and bins of shit. And a lot of this stuff was like, you know, way more than I could review, you know, way more than I could ever, you know, send to someone realistically to review. And stuff was coming in that made absolutely no sense. Like at one point I got onto Island Records everything list.
Oh, wow. So a bunch of reggae?
No, shit, I got like oh, here's the new Backstreet Boys record, because all these stuff was on Island, right? So I you know, I'd go to the mailbox, and there'd be, like, you know, something I could legitimately review, and then a bunch of, like, really horrible stuff from small bands that I can't do anything with, and then, you know, there'd be publicists that would send me multiple copies of shit, and then there'd be stuff like Island Records where I would go there, and there'd be, like, a bunch of Mariah Carey records in the mail. So most of this stuff went into a bin, and I went down to The Beat Goes On, which was our local used store, and I would just trade it in for stuff that was useful. And it was a little bit of a joke, because I'm trading in all this stuff that has like the barcode punched out on it, because they're like, you know, this is for promo purposes. I made a point of never, you know, doing that with something that was, you know, seriously, what's it called, like pre-release or anything like that, because, you know, I understand that. I'm not a dick. But hey, I'm a university student, so if you're going to send me garbage that I didn't ask for unsolicited, I'm probably going to sell it to get other stuff. So anyways, we sold a lot of stuff there and picked up a lot of stuff there. And you know, I'd be basically selling promo CDs and then buying different promo CDs off the rack, was what it felt like. But anyways, so this store is still there, and I knew it was still there. So before we went to this trip up to Guelph this past weekend, I filled like one of those big reusable grocery bags with as many CDs and crap DVDs that accumulated in my basement over the past decade as I could. Went in there, plopped it up on the table, and was just like, just take all of this. And what I managed to do is they have a small vinyl selection there. Now, it was all new stuff. They don't stock used there. But I thought, you know what? If I can get like lunch and a record out of getting rid of this pile of shit that's in my basement, then that's cool. It turns out I got a little bit more than I was looking for, so I ended up with three records and lunch, which was cool. So grab the new Nico Case record, because it's great, so I have that. And then the other two, I had a new copy, of course, of Fugazi's The Argument, which is bar none one of my favorite Fugazi records, if not the favorite. So I have that, which makes me happy. And then I grabbed a copy of Outside Love by the Pink Mountaintops. Now, I don't know if you know the Pink Mountaintops. A Canadian band out of Vancouver led by Steve McBean, who is the frontman of Black Mountain. There's kind of like a theme, Black Mountain, Pink Mountaintops here, which is, I don't know what you would call it. Black Mountain plays like, you know, like weird, sludgy indie rock. I don't know what you would call what Black Mountain plays. It's kind of like, you know, psychedelic-y, you know, classic rock-inspired stuff. The last few Black Mountain records have been really good. But anyways, the Pink Mountaintops is kind of his, like, weird pop side project. So Outside Love is a record by them from 2009 on Jaguar, and it's great, and I'm really happy that I have a copy of it right now. So, yeah, that was my over-the-weekend find. But I'm just so happy to get this bag of stuff out of my basement, let me tell you.
Adam, can you describe what it's like to walk into a record store and just know that there's gold in them bar hills?
I I can describe what it feels like when you know you don't have time to actually execute on that. Mm.
Adam, are you a rarities guy? You know me, I'm a rarities guy. Do you collect, like, rare stuff?
I don't turn away from it, but I think that you and I are different sides of a coin here in that you are so deep down your vinyl hole. And for me, it's something that I have recently decided that I need to stop avoiding and just,
I'm telling you, Adam, the dollar grace. Bin. No one listens to me. All the punk rock kids want to be cool and they want to spend, you know, $40 on a Discharge record. I'm telling you, baby, the dollar bin. The dollar bin, the dollar bin. You can get the Smiths and the Clash in there sometimes. The dollar bin, people. Not to mention Marvin Gaye, the Spinners, the Rolling Stones, AC/DC, Judas Priest, Black Sabbath. David Bowie, the dollar bin, baby.
All right, we should probably talk about punk news.
Yeah, we probably should.
Maybe.
Take it away, Adam. Take it away.
What? Oh, shit. Okay. So, over the past week, lots of news on the new Against Me thing that have come out here. So, it was the new record, Transgender Dysphoria Blues from Against Me, has gone up for pre-order on iTunes, at least. And if you did pre-order said song, you could get a download of the wonderfully titled, all caps lock, no spaces, Fuck My Life 666 song. And they actually put that song up for streaming on SoundCloud right now. So this is important because this is really the first full studio version of one of the new Against Me songs that has been made widely available. So this is really the first I think anyone's really hearing of how this record is going to turn out. So the actual album this is going to be on is due out on January 21st. It follows up 2010's White Crosses. Parts of this record were recorded at Studio 606, Earthsound Studio, Motor Studio, and Total Trouble Studio, which is Lord Jane's studio. In addition to, you know, longtime members Lord Jane Grace and guitarist James Bowman, the album features the debut of drummer Adam Willard, who you guys know from Rock from the Crypt, and Fat Mike of NoFX plays bass on a couple of the tracks, the Fuck My Life 666, and the song Unconditional Love. So you guys can go hear this. We're streaming it on Punk News right now. Now, this song is not completely new, because it appeared acoustically on the True Trans EP that Laura Jane put out a few months ago, I guess. So Not completely new, but the first studio version of the song that anyone has heard. So, did you take a listen? What'd you think?
I'm not a huge Against Me fan, but I'm very interested in this record. I gotta say, I thought the track was pretty good. I mean, I'm not a huge Against Me fan, but I like this song. I mean, I'm not a maniac about it, but I thought it was really good. I thought it was energetic, strong. Had a good fundamental bass to the actual song. I was surprised at how pop-punkish it sounded, to tell you the truth. Because when people think of Against Me, I don't think they think of pop-punk. But I definitely was feeling a pop-punk vibe on this jam.
Well, see, I'm curious about that. Because if you look at the last... Well, I guess if you... So before the True Trans EP came out, the last thing they released was the Russian Spies 7-inch that was backed with...
Occult Enemies.
Occult Enemies, yeah. And that was super poppy, like not poppy in the way that not implying that the not poppy in that it was, you know, too produced or anything like that. Poppy in that, like, it was like, you know, those were really solid little pop songs that were on there. I expected this to come out as a little bit more angsty and aggressive, given the life change that Laura Jane's been going through, and maybe this record goes there, but this is good. This is fun. I'm really curious to hear how this whole thing kind of, you know, plays out and holds together.
What else can we say? You know, Fat Mike does a good job. Adam Willard does a good job. It seems that people are excited about Against Me again. And it's, you know, for a while Against Me was facing some pretty severe hate, I would say, following the New Wave record, you know. I think Large Jane Grace has basically won people back. We should talk about this. The record's only like 26 minutes long or something, and people were kind of saying, it's a little short. But I gotta say, you're better off doing a Dynamite 26 minutes than a Dynamite 26 minutes and 14 OK minutes.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I would be okay if every record I bought was, you know, a long EP or something from now on.
I mean, was it Circle Jerks Group Sex, one of the greatest albums ever, is only like 16 minutes, you know. Slayer's Reign in Blood is only like 28 minutes. Misfits Earth AD is only like 23 minutes. So honestly, really, for an album, you only need 16 minutes for an album, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. I've always been a fan of succinct short things. I mean, I like short songs. I'm okay with records
like
that
songs.
Are short.
I like short songs.
Yeah, you know, I'm entirely okay with records that are good and short rather than these. I don't know. These bands keep putting out these 40 plus minute things that are just dreadful to slug through. I mean, I don't really care how good you are. It takes. You know, you've got to really change it up and have some dynamics on there to make someone sit down at this point for 40 minutes and become engaged with something. Like, you've got to really have some chops. And if you're just, you know, you're just a touring rock band these days, that's just, you know, you know that you're not, you know, fill in whoever, right? You're not the Beatles. You're not, you know, one of these bands that is, you know, going to be held up for their legendary songwriting in 40 years. It's okay if you know, instead of releasing one giant 40 minute opus, you release two shorter 20 minute things that people would actually be into from front to back. I think that's okay. I don't know why we're scared of that.
Well, Adam, you'll remember this in the 90s when every record was at least 65 minutes long. Oh, so much filler. So much filler.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that we were just talking about vinyl so much, because I'm not going to talk about something that makes digital so great, is that you don't need to record at length anymore. Like, if the artistic statement that you're trying to put together happens to be like 16 and a half minutes long, then make it 16 and a half minutes long. I don't think anyone's going to be like knocking on your door going, well, what are you going to put on the rest of the CD? You're wasting plastic. Like, you're not at that point.
Ah, but there is something to be said when somebody does 80 or 90 minutes and really nail those 80 or 90 minutes.
Few and far between.
Rolling Stone, Exile on Main Street, Pink Floyd's The Wall, London
yeah,
Calling.
Yeah, you're pulling out people that are like legitimate legends of that field. I mean, give me something that Pennywise ain't going to go record. You know, a 60-minute thing that's going to hold your attention, even if you are the biggest Pennywise fan on earth. I don't know why I'm even talking about Pennywise.
Actually, well, Adam, that's an excellent point. If Off put out an 80-minute record, I might get bored of it. But if they keep putting out 20-minute records, I'm like, yes, this is the best record I've ever heard.
Exactly, and that's it.
Well, good enough. Speaking of things people are getting excited about, I was surprised that like people were really jazzed about this record. Ice-T is putting out a new record with his Body Count band. Body Count is Ice-T's hardcore / metal band. The new record is going to be called Manslaughter, and it'll be out in early 2014. And it seemed, and honestly, I put this news item up because I thought that, well, I like Ice-T, and I just thought it'd be like a cool news article. But it seems the punk news audience was really psyched for the new Ice-T record, which really surprised me.
Yeah, you know what? It's odd what all of a sudden our people won't be super snarky about, but this is one of them. This is so kind of like out of my wheelhouse of stuff that I can legitimately comment on that I'm not even going to bother. So, you know, you want to talk to the people about Body Count?
Yeah, I guess, you know, we've got a lot of younger listeners these days. I hope they don't find that offensive that I call them younger. But Body Count.
Some people are younger than others.
Well, I know, but it's like in punk rock, they're like, don't be ageist. So I'm like, listen, son, you're 14. Let me tell you about Body Count. They're like, don't be ageist. I'm just because I'm 14 doesn't mean I don't know about Body Count, you know?
Yes, but, it does. So go ahead.
Body Count is a pretty important band because, as the listeners probably know, Ice-T is one of the most important MCs of all time. He actually probably coined the term gangsta rap because he had the song Gangster Rap from like 1983, I think, on a 7-inch. Ice-T actually goes way back to 79. His earliest release was on an 8-track. That just goes to show you how old school Ice-T is. So he was around just after, not at the birth of hip-hop, but just after the birth of hip-hop. So in the late 80s, he formed a band called Body Count, which was basically him and other people doing like hardcore punk rock kind of music. It was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't the greatest music ever, but it was pretty good. It was significant. I'm just going to come out and say it. It was significant because at the time, there weren't a whole lot of African Americans being featured on MTV playing instruments. You had R&B and hip-hop guys, but they didn't show a whole lot of all African-American bands. So it was important because it was a lot of it was a group of African-Americans playing aggressive punk rock-ish kind of music. And both Ice-T and Chuck D have made the argument that, you know, it was African-Americans who came up with, you know, wild aggressive music to begin with. If you look at Jimi Hendrix or even before him, Chuck Berry or Little Richard, those are the foundations of rock and roll, and those guys are African-Americans. And now I think when people think of punk rock and rock, they don't go right to thinking of African-American people. I think I said that delicately enough. What do you think, Adam?
I think so. So I guess here's a question.
I'm almost finished though. So that was Body Count, and that's why. But Body Count also had a song called Cop Killer, which this was at the time of the PMRC, which Cop Killer was about shooting a police officer because the police officer was violating the person's rights and threatening that person's life. So it was a big hubbub. The police department said you should boycott Ice-T. The PMRC tried to get Body Count thrown off the record label. What the record label actually did was they removed Cop Killer from the first album and then re-released the first album, making the very first edition of the first album a collector's item. And since then, you know, Ice-T has been, you know, pretty vocal that he likes hip-hop, but he also likes doing organic music as well, if that's how you can put it, and that he thinks African-Americans should be more participant in, and he doesn't blame it on African-Americans. He also blames it on outside forces, saying that there are forces keeping African-Americans out of this kind of music, and so that's why he's particularly interested in making this kind of music, along with Chuck D's The Band, which is of a similar bend.
So, does Body Count deserve shit for basically getting the ball rolling on what became 4 or 5 years of really, really scary rap metal that we were all subjected to in the late 90s.
I think you can place that on Rage Against the Machine, honestly.
Like, yeah, I would go Rage more, but Body Count was before them, right?
Right, well, see, like Rage might say they weren't influenced by Body Count, but honestly, any rap rock combo was influenced by Body Count, for sure. Them and the Beastie Boys, you know. But these terrible, terrible bands like Limp Bizkit, like what's the other terrible band? What's the other one? Limp Bizkit, and there's two of them that are really, really bad.
Wasn't Korn? Korn.
But there was one other one that was exactly like Limp Bizkit. I can't think of them now. Damn.
I don't know.
Because Limp Bizkit used to be like the ripoff of the other crappier one, but then Limp Bizkit became more popular. At any rate,
history has forgotten you, bands.
At any rate, I mean, like, if I have to accept Limp Bizkit to get Ice-T and Body Count, I'll accept it. Body Count isn't the greatest band ever, but they do have some really, really solid songs. So, and for a while, people were writing them off and just saying, Body Count sucks. But people seem excited about it against it again. So I'm happy for Ice-T. I think Ice-T is a great musician. And as I've said before, I respect longevity. So I'm psyched that Ice-T's still at it, trying to make new, interesting music.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to the next story here. Brand New, which is a band that, you know, all those 14-year-olds that didn't like, that didn't know Body Count are probably into. Was that ageist? That sounded ageist.
That was ageist, Adam. You ageist.
I told you. We're just full of horrible biases.
Linkin Park. They were the other crappy ones.
There you go. Okay. Anyways, Brand New. So anyway, they have spontaneously announced 4 U.S. shows next month. The band note that each of these shows will feature 2 of their 4 albums being performed front to back along with their corresponding B-sides. Those 4 albums would be 2009's, I don't know why we're out of order here, 2009's Daisy, 2006's The Devil and God Are Raging Inside Me, 2003's Déjà Entendu, and 2001's Your Favorite Weapon. Now, they're not saying which 2 albums they're going to play at each show, so you just kind of have to roll the dice on that. Pre-sale tickets for the shows are now available. You can find links to all that stuff on Punk News. So basically, they're playing 2 shows in Santa Ana, California at the Observatory on December 9th and 10th, a show in Huntington, New York on the 20th, and a show in Sayreville, New Jersey. Is that right?
Yes, I've been there many times.
All right, there you go. At the Starland Ballroom on the 21st. So, if you are into Brand New, this is probably exciting. I am not. So, now I'd be quiet.
I thought you were. I mean, honestly, Adam, I know. Honestly, Adam, I guess we're at just the cutoff because I know a lot of Punk News editors that are like 26 or 27 are getting really, really excited about the Brand New shows and how Brand New is like doing a couple of their albums in full. I'm not that into Brand New, to tell you the truth.
You know what? Brand New actually falls into a category of bands for me that if and I'm totally guilty of this for a few years, that if you go back and look at my top 10 list from that year that they were really big, I probably have a record of theirs on there where everyone was going crazy about the band and I really dragged my feet on it because I didn't really figure out what it was, and then I forced myself to go sit down. I'm going to get this record. I'm going to figure out why people really like this, and I'd listen to it for a few times, usually in anticipation of a year-end list, really. And then it would click into my head. I'm like, all right, I get why this is good. Like, I get why this, within the genre that it is in, within the subgenre of the subgenre that it's in, it pushes the envelope on that sound. Like, I get that. I get why it is good from a textbook perspective. And as such, I'm not going to bag on it because it's good. But my problem is that any time I do that with something that I truly wouldn't give a shit about otherwise, 3 days after the list comes out, I would just never listen to it again. And that has happened to me numerous times. I don't do it anymore. But it would happen with bands. Any band that got super hyped like that amongst our people that was technically a good band, but I just didn't give a shit about, I was guilty of that with. So I did it with Brand New. I'm pretty sure I did it with the Blood Brothers. People who like Brand New, you're totally allowed to. I'm not stopping you. I just don't care. But, man, people like that band.
Yeah, I just don't get why people are so into that band. It honestly just sounds kind of like, I don't know, bland radio rock to me. But like I said, maybe it's me. Punk News listeners, tell me, what Brand New jam should I listen to? What should I check out Brand New wise? And Adam, I'll come clean here. On my best of 2010 list, I fell in that same trap. I put Trash Talk at number 20. Let me tell you, Trash Talk is not a number 20 band, let me tell you. I put Liars at 18. They're an interesting band, but not an 18, let me tell you. I put the Soft Pack at 14. The only reason I like their first album, The Muslims, but the Soft Pack at 14, no. Woo, I gotta say, that was not my finest moment. Although my top records, Off, Ceremony, Danzig, Melvins, Guar, KRS-One, High on Fire, Johnny Cash, No Bunny, Lee Scratch Perry, Triclops, I stand behind all that.
Yeah, and that's I've never had a problem standing by my things that were on my top of my list, but yeah. You know, there were a few years where there were some things down there in the bottom of those lists that I don't know.
I hear you. Well, speaking of things that might be the top of my list next year, Morning Glory, which features Ezra Kirey. I don't know if we should still say formerly of Leftover Cracking, Choking Victim, because that's almost insulting him. Because, I mean, Morning Glory is its own band by now, and it's a good band. They just put out a brand new a song off their new album, supposed to come out in February 2014. The song is called Pet Monster, and actually Ezra Kirey was nice to send us an exclusive little quote. He said, "We've just released a new free song off the upcoming full length A Little Early, which I'm currently in the studio mixing, due out by February 2014. Brian Viglione is featured on the drums, and I'm particularly partial to this one because it's kind of a childish tune, and I'm a childish kind of guy. I'm always trying to be someone's big silly monster, and I definitely drool and fart at the table." So I gotta say, man, the last Morning Glory record was really, really, really good. I think I put it like number 2 on my top 20. The new jam sounds good. Sounds a little bit less bombastic and more straightforward hardcore / punk. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a great record.
You know what? I initially mentally sort of wrote this off because I sort of feel like the Crack Rock Steady family of bands, it's kind of like they're like juggalos to me, right? Where it's just like, it's this totally crazy little group that goes off and has their crazy fans and, you know, all the power in the world to them. But, you know, I'm not going to go there. But, this song is really good. at least I feel like it's really good. Like, I was expecting this to be more like Stizza's stuff, which, you know, has a certain Stizza-ness to it. You know, you kind of know what beats that guy is going to play. This is, you know, it is like just a classically put together little punk rock song, and I very much enjoyed it. So. Well, see,
that's why I love Choking, later Choking Victim and Early Leftover Crack, because both Stizza, well, he goes by Scott Sturgeon now, but he still is Stizza. Both him and Ezra Kirei are so different vocally and stylistically, and they just work together so well. Like, you know, you'll see in a lot of great bands, like, two different songwriters that when they lock together just so phenomenal. Those two were that way, but they're both pretty good separate too. I think that Ezra Kirei's style is wildly different than Stizza's now, but I like them both, and I'm just going to spend 3 minutes, because people like to hate on Stizza. I think Stizza is phenomenal. I think he's one of the most clever punk rock musicians there is, because he created this character, this concept of, you know, Satan worshiping, that it's good to commit suicide and smoke, you know, crack, and it's good to, like, hate cops and say you want to kill cops. Because before then, like punk rock was so posy, especially ska. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't do drugs, I care about my friends, don't commit suicide, you'll be sorry if you commit suicide. And Stizza just comes out as, like, this bad guy saying, yeah, you should commit suicide, I'll do it, you know, I smoke crack, I don't care. And it's just so perfectly nihilistic and self-destructive and clever. I just think it's one of the most clever expressions we've seen in punk to date. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that with that music, I mean, it's not for pure comedy, but the Leftover Crack guys are winking at themselves, like with songs like Crack Rock Steady and that kind of stuff. I mean, they're trying to be over the top a little bit. So I think all those guys, Brad Logan, Scott Sturgeon, Ezra Kirei, Arabarabjian, I think they're all I forgot the bass player. Well, they're all fantastic musicians, and I'm a big fan of all of them.
Were you a fan of those of Brad's what F minus the records that he had out on Hellcat? I was really into those back in the day.
Yeah, actually, I am a big fan of those. And actually, Adam, you might not know this, he's got a brand new band that they just put out a demo cassette. We reviewed it at Punk News, called Rats in the Walls, and I like it even better than F minus. It has the edge of F minus, but it also kind of has sort of a more of a classic heavy music sound. So it's got a little bit of Black Sabbath or even like a little bit of Blue Oyster Cult in it with that classic Brad Logan barking. And it's got a girl in it too. They don't tell her name, so I don't know what her name is. So it's got the dual male female. So if you like F minus, I think people will love Rats in the Wall. I love that band. That's one of the records I'm most excited about for next year.
Cool. I really want to hear that. I haven't heard that yet. I don't actually read punk news, right? Because who does?
Oh, so
this is news to me.
Alec Bale or Alec Bailly. I don't really know. That's the other guy in Leftover Crack who's really good. So,
Are we breaking for songs on this show?
Honestly, Adam, I don't really have a song handy. I mean, you got a song on you? I guess we could dig something up.
I don't know. I feel like we've been talking for like 44 minutes and 54 seconds.
So let's see. What should we play? Let's see. What should we play? What do I have that we could play? We could play something by the Dwarves, but we always play stuff by the Dwarves, you know? We could play something by Oh, I know what we can play. Damien Abraham of F'd Up gave us the okay to play one of his older bands from outside of F'd Up. Let me see if I got it on my computer. Oh, I don't, but well, anyway,
you will. So
we're gonna play a song by Pink Eyes, which is Damien Abraham, lead singer of F'd Up. He was in a whole bunch of side bands during the early days of F'd Up, and one of the bands was called Pink Eyes, which was basically a classically hardcore band, and it was him, I think it was Jonah Falco, and I think it might have even been Ben Cook of F'd Up, or maybe it was Ben from No Warning, I forget his last name, Young Gov, whatever his last name is. The songs are kind of funny. The songs are about, like, playing Dungeons and Dragons and robbing indie rock superstars. And so I think they're just a fun band. I happened to come into possession of a super rare Pink Eyes demo CD that I got off eBay for super cheap, which was exciting. So we'll play one of those songs. So this All is right. Pink Eyes, and we'll be back. Get to the cameras and bother my And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Adam, what'd you think of that super rare track?
I love Fucked Up, so that's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool that he... I should give a disclaimer. He says he doesn't really stand behind those lyrics anymore because some of them are offensive. I mean, none of them are, like, racist or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of them are, you know, when you're a teenager, you write, like, you know, like, silly, violent lyrics just to be silly. So Pink Eyes asked, well, Damien asked us to say he doesn't stand behind those lyrics anymore, but I don't even think he needs to apologize. I think the songs are just funny, you know.
Well, speaking of kind of funny, so Slayer's Kerry King
has released
an herbal whiskey.
Whiskey?
So Slayer, along with a few other industry veterans, has released a whiskey. It is called Cold Clock American Herbal Whiskey.
Cold Cock.
Oh, Cold Cock.
Cold Cock. I thought it was clock.
Cock, okay, never mind. Cock. Right.
Cold Cock.
Cold Cock. So, anyways, it's described as a 3-year aged American bourbon blended with a variety of meaningful and toxifying herbs, which is kind of a funny thing to be in. Anyways, including green tea, hibiscus, ginger, eucalyptus, cinnamon, and ginkgo. You can find a link to this on Punk News. It amuses me that you can put detoxifying herbs in a toxifying beverage, but maybe we're looking at two different meanings of the word toxify here. So, yeah, there's a picture of a fist on this bottle, and the bottle appears to be ribbed. So, this is really, I don't know.
This is top-notch stuff, man.
Yeah. I don't know how your liquor cabinet can survive without this. So, especially if you needed to detoxify yourself while toxifying yourself. So, yeah, I don't know. Is there anything to say about this? Have you had any?
No, I haven't. I think it's brand new. I was surprised that it was put out because Slayer is usually sponsored by Jägermeister. And at Slayer concerts, Slayer fans love spending $9 for Jägermeister shots because at Slayer concerts, they usually have like good-looking girls in skimpy outfits walking around with either Dixie cups or test tubes of Jäger, and they're like $9 each. And Slayer fans would be like, I'll take three, and they blow like $27 on like 3 shots of Jäger, and they're just like, yeah, Jäger! You know, which
is... Okay. The bottle is not ribbed, as I thought. It just has the words cold cock up the sides of the bottle in like raised lettering. So if you're looking at it from the front, the bottle does appear to be ribbed. I guess for all intents and purposes, and that you might want this bottle to be ribbed, it is. Anyways,
I'm just gonna let you hang out there with that statement.
Coldcock, okay. Announced the tentative release date for their third LP. Frontman Keith Morris has been on the road recently with Flag, the punk rock supergroup. Off has announced a release date for their third album. According to their Facebook page, they just finished writing the 14th song, and they're saying that April of 2014 is when the sucker will come out. They last released a limited live album called Live at the 930, which John Gentile here on our show has not yet reviewed.
Heard it.
You've heard it?
Yes.
So there you go. Off is more off stuff. You got the work flag into the show. Makes this a very typical episode of the podcast, right?
Yeah. I feel as though maybe we're pinning ourselves into a corner. So maybe until Off actually announces the album or puts out a single, we'll put that on pause. I'm just excited for new Off material. The live album, Live at the 930 Club, is really good. It's just Off being Off live, and they sound... Adam, have you ever seen Off live?
I have not. Mm. I've seen Keith live. I think I saw him play with the Circle Jerks at one point, but yeah, I've not seen Off.
Well, they're great, so I'm excited. So let's see.
But you know what I really want to talk about?
What's that?
Cold Cock Herbal Whiskey.
Herbal Whiskey. Refreshing and detoxifying. Buy it today at your local liquor store.
This has been a really long show. We're just going to end with this, I guess, a little bit of some reminiscing here. It is and I guess this is entirely arbitrary if you think about it. It is, this week has been the 35th anniversary of the release of The Clash's second LP, Give 'Em Enough Rope. It came out on November 10th, of 1978. It was the band's first LP properly released in the United States because 1977's self-titled debut didn't actually come out in the U.S. until 1979 with a different track listing. Yeah, there's all kinds of news and reminiscing and links and shit about this on Punk News that you guys can go check out. I've actually always found that that fact that I just said, John, super fascinating, only because what the Americans came to know, or North Americans, I guess, came to know as the first Clash record had stuff that was recorded with the sessions for this record on it, which sort of distorts, you know, what that initial record was. I mean, like, because White Man at Hammersmith Palais, that was on the Clash as Americans knew it, was recorded with the same sessions as Give Him Enough Rope.
It was? Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was. That was recorded. I want to say Pressure Drop was recorded at the same time, too. I have this written down somewhere. Give me 2 seconds to find out. But yeah, a bunch of those really great early Clash singles that ended up being big parts of the American release of the first Clash record were recorded in the sessions for Give Him Enough Rope, which is just, as a Clash nerd, super fascinating. I'm going to look this up. It'll take me 2 seconds.
It's interesting that Give Him Enough Rope has had a change of critical opinion in the past year. For the longest time, Give Him Enough Rope was considered like the holdover album between the first album and London Calling. I think that's a little bit of a short-sighted view, is because I think the Clash do a lot of interesting things on Give Him Enough Rope that they don't do on the first album, and I think there's a definite change in sound in between the two, even though, as Adam is saying, a lot of the songs were recorded at the same time.
Here you go. White Man and Hammersmith Palais, and Pressure Drop, which is a cover of a great Dudes in the Middle song, of course. 1-2 Crush on You and The Prisoner, which is a song that I love, were all recorded during the sessions for that ended up becoming Give Enough Rope. So there you go.
Fun fact, though, do you know where The Prisoner originally came from?
Are we talking about the amazing 60s TV series, or are we talking about something?
We're talking about Joe Strummer's pre-Clash band, the 101ers.
Oh, that's was it a 101ers song?
It wasn't called The Prisoner, but half the lyrics from it were taken from a 101ers.
Because, Jail Guitar Doors was a 101ers song.
Maybe I'm wrong then. I think it is Jail Guitar Doors.
Aha! All right.
I got outpunked. Outpunked on the Punkers podcast.
Okay. Yeah, so anyways, I don't know. Give Him Enough Rope. It's 35 years old, which is 1 year older than it was last year. I don't know. I love this record. I've always loved this record. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do to celebrate the thing.
Listen to it.
Yeah. Brittany Strummer was telling me that she wants to get the cover of this as a tattoo, which would be really cool.
How many Clash tattoos does she need?
I don't know, but the ones that she has are really well done. These aren't some back alley tattoo that she has. Her Clash tattoos are good.
Very true, very true. Well, I gotta say, it's a great album. I still haven't gotten that box set, but I am gonna get it. Maybe I'll treat myself to it for Christmas because I want those rarities on it, which look pretty sweet. But other than that, it's a good album, I guess we can wrap up this podcast. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah. All right. So there we go. That was good. Cold cock.
You want to close out with a Jello Biafra tune? How's that sound?
That works.
This is a track off Jello's Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine's album. It's called the EP is called Enhanced Method of Questioning. And Adam, I'll let you pick. Do you want to hear Invasion of the Mind Snatchers, or do you want to hear .com Monte Carlo, or Miracle Penis Highway?
That one.
I think it goes well with Cold Cock. Miracle Penis Highway. And Cold Cock is a winning combination. We'll be right back. And thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our phallic episode. I want to thank Adam White for being here with us, as always, giving great commentary.
You're welcome.
And I want to thank the main man, Sound Guy Namron, who is with us at all times. Oh, kind of like Big Brother, 1984, peering in our windows, going through our mail, hiding behind the shower curtain in the bathroom. Sound Guy Namron, he's always there.
Hi, everybody!
And as always, the opinions made on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions made of those people expressing them exclusively and do not in any way represent the opinions of Punk News. We want to thank, actually, Damon Abraham for giving us permission directly to play that rare tune. So I thank you, Damien. And we want to thank Alternative Tentacles and Jello Biafra for letting us play Miracle Penis Highway. Other than that, I guess we'll see you next week.